Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, host of Your Call. You're listening to the Project 2025 What's in It podcast, a special series from KALW Public Media about the far right's agenda outlined in what they're calling Project 2025 Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise. This Heritage Foundation-led plan lays out a comprehensive agenda to transform the United States into a conservative Christian nation under Donald Trump. Project 2025 would dismantle the administrative state and ensure arch-conservative rule for decades to come. It would affect all aspects of life and would be implemented by expanding presidential powers and eliminating federal agencies. One note before we dig in. When this show originally aired live on KALW, we took calls and emails. If you have a comment or perspective to share, email us at project2025@kalw.org. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025 by talking about what the right-wing roadmap would mean for workers, labor rights, and the right to unionize. Donald Trump has been trying to convince the working class that he is on their side in the lead-up to the election, praising blue-collar workers at rallies and claiming that he'll kickstart domestic manufacturing in his second term, just like he did in his first term. But during his first 4 years as president, Trump was anti-worker and anti-union. The National Labor Relations Board members he appointed made it more difficult for unions to win representation at non-union workplaces, and the Trump Supreme Court issued a devastating ruling against public sector unions that made it easier for government employees nationwide to not pay union dues even if their workplace is unionized, according to CNN. On August 13th, the UAW filed federal labor charges against Donald Trump and Elon Musk for their, quote, illegal attempts to threaten and intimidate workers who stand up for themselves by engaging in protected concerted activity such as strikes. The filing comes after Trump told Musk on his social media platform that he supports the illegal firing of striking workers.
You want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay. You're all gone. You're all gone. So every one of you is gone and you are the greatest. You would be very good. Oh, you would love it.
According to the UAW, under federal law, workers cannot be fired for going on strike, and threatening to do so is illegal under the National Labor Relations Act. So what can we expect from a second Trump administration? What about Project 2025, and what is at stake in this election? Project 2025 includes provisions to cut overtime pay for millions of workers and suggests Congress should consider getting rid of public sector unions altogether. It would also roll back worker safety laws, including those that protect children. We are already seeing this in Republican-controlled states. Joining us are two guests. Elena Lopez is Deputy Legislative Director for the Communications Workers of America. CWA is the largest communications and media labor union in the country, representing about 700,000 members in the private and public sectors. Hi, Elena. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Jody Calamine, Director of Advocacy for the AFL-CIO, a national trade union center that is the largest federation of unions in the country. It's made up of 60 national and international unions, together representing more than 12 million active and retired workers. Hi, Jody. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So we are so close to Election Day. Can I begin by asking you both, what is at stake in this election? Elena, why don't you start off first talking about what's at stake for workers in this election?
Great question, Rose. I feel like you summed it up. There is so much at stake for workers this election. And I mean, just going down right to getting to the nitty gritty of it, right? Our ability to organize and bargain for better wages, better working conditions, better benefits. That is all at stake, you know, in November whether it's looking at the details of Project 2025 and how it allows employers to retaliate against union organizers, or, makes it illegal for employers to voluntarily recognize unions for companies that, want to voluntarily recognize. I think our ability to kind of better our working conditions is at stake.
What would you add, Jody?
I say what's at stake is some of the very foundations of our democracy. And Project 2025, if you read it in detail, the 900 pages or so, and then step back, you realize it is a complete reimagining of our lives just by looking at the labor provisions in it. It changes our work law. Lives in horrible, nightmarish ways. It has the labor movement has fought against for decades that comes from big business, which is the rollback of our rights and the rollback of regulations and wages that we've come to rely upon. It has all of that, but it has so much more. It has elements that are designed to divide workers and promote racism and sexism. It has a plan to kind of weaken private sector unions and replace them with unions that are controlled by the company. And then, like you said, completely eliminate public sector unions. And it does this interesting thing, which is to have it privileges religious employers such that when you if you have a job and your employer has a particular religious view, your job could be at risk if you don't comport and satisfy with that religious view. It privileges religious employers. So it's kind of a vision of a less safe and less secure, less fair, less free life for all Americans.
Can you elaborate on that part of Project 2025?
Sure. On the with respect to religious employers, what Project 2025 suggests or calls for is allowing a your boss's religion to trump your civil rights. That is, their religious views will trump your right to, I guess, live the life you want to live. So it would open the doors to new kinds of discrimination, or old, really old kinds of discrimination, based on whatever it might be, your outside lifestyle. That is, if you're married or not, if you have kids or not, if you are, or your gender identity or your sexual orientation, all of those types of things could be subject to the boss's religious whims.
We're going to talk more about Project 2025 in a minute, but I also want to ask you both about Trump's record on labor, because you often hear, I hear this almost every day, that when you look at the polling, Trump is winning on the economy. And if he would just stick to that, he'd be in a much better place. So you hear that on a regular basis. We're going to actually talk about the economy next week. But he also is once again saying that he is for the working class. And Jody, the AFL-CIO looked at what you all call Trump's anti-labor track record. You put out a press release last September, and you said his record was catastrophic for workers. He spent 4 years weakening unions and working people while pushing tax giveaways to the wealthiest among us. He stacked the courts with judges who want to roll back our rights on the job. He made us less safe at work. He gave big corporations free rein to lower wages and make it harder for workers to stand together in a union. So, can you remind us, what did we see during the Trump administration?
Well, we saw the NLRB get stacked with anti-worker members, and they were on the hunt at the behest of the Chamber of Commerce to roll back a number of rights that workers had. One of the things they did was try to slow down union elections, that is your representation elections, so that to give employers more time to union bust and engage in unfair labor practices to kill a union organizing drive. So that's what they did there. And they were in no way interested in promoting workers' rights at any of their agencies. And what's so scary about Project 2025 is that they feel like they didn't do enough. Clearly, this was written by the majority of the authors of this document. They came from the Trump administration. They expect to return to a next Trump administration, and this time they've drafted this blueprint so that they will engage in their agenda in a much more orderly fashion and achieve their goals, which include things like eliminating workers' rights to overtime and allowing states to opt out of minimum wage and opening the door to teenagers working in hazardous occupations. All of those types of things they've now written down in this blueprint. And that's how that's what is to come if Trump were to be reelected.
Elena, the CWA also put out a lengthy paper on Trump's anti-worker record. There's so much in here. I'll just read from a few, and I might repeat myself a bit. But Trump packed the courts with anti-labor judges who've made the entire public sector right to work for less in an attempt to financially weaken unions by increasing the number of freeloaders. He stacked the NLRB with anti-union appointees who side with employers in contract disputes and support companies who delay and stall union elections, misclassify workers to take away their freedom to join a union, and silence workers. He made it easier for employees to fire or penalize workers who speak up for better pay and working conditions or exercise the right to strike. He promised to veto the PRO Act and the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act, historic legislation that will reverse decades of legislation meant to crush private sector unions. The list just goes on and on here. Change the rules about who qualifies for overtime pay, reduce the number of OSHA inspectors, threaten to veto legislation that would raise minimum wage to $15 an hour. And then this one's important. It's so easy to forget all of this. Trump's Secretary of Labor, Eugene Scalia, was an anti-worker union-busting corporate lawyer who aggressively defended Cablevision's decision to fire 22 workers when they tried to win a contract with the CWA. So tell us a bit more about just what we saw under the Trump administration.
I mean, I feel like that's a very detailed list. And I think, right, one of the key points there is who was working in the Trump administration, right? Who were the ones making the laws? Who were the ones writing the rules for the agencies? And as you can see, you know, with, for example, Eugene Scalia, like he was not a friend to labor. He had a historic anti-worker record, especially in relation to CWA and our workers. Yet he was qualified enough for Trump to be the Department of Labor Secretary, right? Whereas in this administration, we have, you know, champions like we had Marty Walsh, and now we have, you know, Secretary Sue, those who are actually fighting to protect workers and uphold their rights to organize and bargain. But even, you know, smaller than Secretary of Labor, you had folks on the NLRB, like Jody was mentioned, folks who are working in OSHA, judges that really didn't care for workers, right? They're siding on the they're siding with the companies and multinational corporations and, you know, honestly, those who have money. Whereas, you know, workers were left to defend themselves and, you know, fight against the corporate greed that often push them into unsafe working conditions, fight to make sure they can make a living wage. And so I think it's really important to look at like who is stacking, right? Who are the people that are working within the administration? Because that sets a lot of the policy, right? It's not just Trump at the top. It is who is he appointing to make sure that they have a, you know, agency that is working for workers. And you know, I think very clearly his, you know, promise to veto the PRO Act and the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act, those are, you know, historic landmark labor law legislation that we have fought for and, you know, tried to get passed into Congress. And, you know, the fact that he's going to veto this, which would make it easier for workers to organize and bargain and, you know, put real penalties on companies that violate labor law, he's vetoing that. And so I think that's a clear indication of, you know, where Trump is, along with the many anti-worker things that you listed he did during his administration.
And Elena, how would you rate Labor Secretary Julie Hsu so far?
Amazing, 100 out of 10. She, you know, I think never fails to meet with workers, talk about the issues that matter to workers, and, you know, I think is very proactive in ensuring that, you know, the things that DealWell is implementing, as well as other agencies or other agencies within the federal government, are taking a pro-worker lens to the work that they're doing, because, you know, frankly, these things are not in silo, right? Whatever is happening in commerce or in the EPA or Department of Edge, you know, there's workers on the ground who are affected by the policies there. And she is doing what she can to ensure that, you know, I think workers in all fields are protected.
And Jody, I'm just learning, looking at the AFL-CIO website, that Labor Secretary Julie Hsu recently held an event recognizing a historic victory. This was in late September. It's a first-time union contract covering more than 4,000 of the Venetian Resort team members in Las Vegas. They have been fighting for this contract for 25 years. This is incredible. And so this now means that the Las Vegas Strip is 100% union. That's just incredible.
Yeah, and it's emblematic of the last couple of years with all of the union organizing and contract fights and strikes that have been happening. What the Biden administration has done, the Biden board has done, is to one way they've simply gotten out of the way and allowed workers to exercise their rights. If you let workers get together, they can solve problems and they can build power and change, you know, their work lives, change the lives of their coworkers in very good ways. And this is a prime example of it. And we saw the UAW strike, I guess that was about a summer ago, make a huge difference in people's lives. And, you know, the phoniness of Trump's pro-worker rhetoric at times, I think, is best illustrated by what Julie Hsu has done recently, which is the Department of Labor, under her leadership and under President Biden, has issued new regulations on overtime that expand overtime rights to millions of new workers. And at the same time that's happening, you've got Donald Trump saying he wants to exempt overtime pay from taxes, but he rolls back your right to overtime pay. So you actually won't get any overtime pay. It might have lower taxes on it under Trump, but you actually won't be receiving any of it because he is under Project 2025, allowing employers to get out from under their obligations.
And before we talk more about that, you said what's working with the Biden administration is that they're getting out of the way of workers. What do you mean exactly by that?
I believe deep in my soul that in collective bargaining, and what that means is when, you know, workers can solve their problems if they're free to join together and organize and exercise their full bargaining power at a bargaining table. And by protecting their right to organize, they're freeing workers up to do that very thing. That's what's happening.
Well, today we are talking about what is in store for workers and the right to unionize at a time when we are seeing more bargaining, collective bargaining than ever, more organizing, I should say, in the last couple of decades, in the last couple of decades for sure, more organizing than ever, more unionizing than ever, more support for unions. So what can we expect to see from Project 2025? What can we expect to see from another Trump administration? Today, we're joined by Jody Calamine, Director of Advocacy for the AFL-CIO. Elena Lopez is Deputy Legislative Director for the Communications Workers of America. Elena, one of the themes that has come up on our shows about Project 2025 is that the plan is to fire thousands of civil servants. So people who've been working in the government at the federal level for many, many years, and then replace them with MAGA loyalists. The other thing that we're learning is that during the first Trump administration, because a lot of people didn't think he was going to win, they just didn't have a lot of plans in place. And in some cases, they either went too far or internally, they had people pushing back at what they wanted to do. And this time around, they want to make sure that's not the case. So they've got the plan laid out, and they're going to have loyalists, no debate, and they are very, very well organized. So can you talk about that and how that would translate into what they're planning to do when it comes to labor and organizing?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a very important point, is that right during kind of the first Trump administration, you know, a lot of chaos, I think, as we all remember, and there was significant pushback from, you know, not, you know, Secretary of Labor, Secretary of Transportation, right, but kind of more mid-level employees who really didn't have much to do with policy rather than just doing their actual jobs. So in an effort to stop that, they want to get rid of these, you know, what is Schedule F employees who, again, might not be working on actual federal legislative executive policy. You know, I like to liken it toward someone being a nurse at the VA, for example, or, you know, a railroad safety expert just trying to ensure that trains don't crash into one another, right? These are employees that kind of keep our government functioning and make sure that we're all safe. But Trump didn't like this pushback, and his cronies didn't either. And so in an effort to be more organized this time around, they want to get rid of all these sorts of employees. And they have this interview process now that kind of, you know, scans to where someone might lie on the, you know, spectrum of political beliefs. How loyal are they to Trump? How loyal are they to, you know, committing Project 2025, making it a reality? And so I think that's kind of the scary part is, right, they've gotten their act together this time around. And I think that's like an important thing to recognize, that when we look at what's at stake, it's like, oh, they're starting to facilitate this plan at the moment. And so, you know, many of these workers, one would be AFSCME members that would unfortunately be, you know, either lose their jobs or, you know, their jobs might be in danger because they're not, you know, blindly following Trump. But I think it would have implications for the broader labor movement, because then we don't have folks who are necessarily looking at the big picture as the whole. It's that, oh, what does, you know, a President Trump want? What does a Secretary Eugene Scalia want? And let's put that into action regardless of the effects on the broader labor movement.
Jody, what concerns you about how well organized they are this time around?
What concerns me about it is that they will move swiftly to do a lot more damage to our democracy and to our rights in general than we saw before. I mean, when Trump won the presidency in the 2016 election, he was not prepared to be president. And he did what he usually does, which is surround himself with a few family members and gave them some jobs. And so the operation was very clumsy. And this time, the people around him, the people who have a hardcore far right agenda are you know, getting ready. They put together this blueprint in great detail, and they expect to be placed right in the positions of power that they need to be to implement all of this. So it will come fast and furious. And as Elena was pointing out, with the Schedule F proposal, which would remove civil service protections from tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of federal employees, that will pave the way for all kinds of things to happen, which will be done in secret, which will violate the Constitution and violate people's rights, because you won't have these civil servants with a union backing them up blowing the whistle when they see something wrong. They will be retaliated against and replaced by Trump loyalists so that this operation can just continue.
Today, we continue our series on Project 2025 by talking about what it would mean for workers, labor rights, and the right to unionize. Today, we're joined by Elena Lopez, Deputy Legislative Director for the Communications Workers of America. They represent 700,000 members in the private and public sectors. Jody Calamine is Director of Advocacy for the AFL-CIO. They represent more than 12 million active and retired workers. Let's go to, actually, Art has a question via email. How do you explain the Teamsters' lack of an endorsement for Kamala Harris? What would you say to rank-and-file Teamsters listening to you right now who might be on the fence about their vote? Jody, do you want to take that one first?
I would say to the Teamsters on the ground that one of the major legislative asks from Teamster members over the last few years has been saving their pensions, the Central States Pension Plan, as well as a slew of other multi-employer pension plans, were in a funding crisis, President Biden, with Vice President Harris breaking the tie vote, saved the Central States pension and saved Teamsters' pensions. There is nothing more stark than that. Unfortunately, every single Republican voted against this measure in the Senate. But in the very early days of the Biden administration, those pensions were saved and people's retirement security was restored. And it is thanks to the fact that Vice President Harris was there presiding over that Senate and casting the tie-breaking vote.
You know, can I ask you, Jody, just hearing you talk about pensions, I've been taking care of my dad, who's got some major health issues right now, and he was a member of a sheet metal union, thank goodness. And he told me that back in the 70s, they went on strike. And I can't even believe this. Back in the 70s, they got a $12.50 an hour raise. Can you imagine? I mean, $12.50 on top of what he was already making back in the 70s. And he said that some of his friends who were also sheet metal workers back then did not join a union, and they're really struggling right now. I mean, my dad's in his early 70s. Luckily, he's got health care and he's got a pension. And so because he's not doing well, we just don't have to worry because he's got such amazing, you know, amazing health care plan and a pension. And it really makes me, my mom doesn't, it makes me think about where we are right now with pensions. I mean, my generation, Generation X, so many of us don't have a pension and we're not going to. So do you have numbers on that? I just think about this a lot, given that I'm now taking care of my parents and looking at just the social safety net, who it's there for and who it's not there for.
Well, off the top of my head, I can't give you the precise statistics. However, union members are way more likely than non-union workers to have a defined benefit pension. And that's the kind of pension where you're guaranteed an annuity for the rest of your life. Mm. It's there no matter what. That is the gold standard for retirement security. And as labor unions came under increasing attack, especially in the 1980s and right through the 90s, these pension plans started to be dropped. The employers were not becoming unionized. So there was no pressure on them to create a defined benefit plan. And over time, those defined benefit plans have been replaced, if you're lucky, with something like a 401k, which is defined contribution that just moves the risk from the employer to the employee. I am hopeful that, all of the organizing and striking and bargaining that's going on today will start to rebuild these pension plans in time so that the next generation can have a secure retirement. Mm.
What would you like to add about this, Elena, and just pensions and what you see, how things have changed within the Democratic Party on these issues and then the Republican Party on these issues? Because 50,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. And there's just, how are people supposed to live if they don't have a pension. So many older people struggle to make ends meet and, you know, pay their mortgage or pay their rent. So this is something that just deserves so much more attention.
Agreed. Right. I think this is, you know, a topic we could talk about for length. And I will also say that, you know, my dad passed away 3 years ago and my mom was able to get by because she had my dad's pension. Right. My mom, domestic worker, obviously did not have any sort of retirement security, but luckily, you know, with the pension, able to, you know, survive and, you know, keep moving on. And so it's, you know, I think as we're comparing the two parties, you know, to Jordy's original point, right, there is one president, you know, who saved retirement security for, you know, working people all across the country, not just Teamsters, right? IUECWA members' pensions were also saved by, you know, the passage of the IRA. And so I think, right, that's one clear distinction of where the parties are at. Trump could have done this. He did not do it. It took President Biden signing this into law and, you know, us fighting for it to make sure that, you know, folks could retire with security. Because you're right, people are feeling the struggle right now. And I think, you know, part of the reason that we see such a growth in organizing and folks wanting to join a union is because people see, workers see unions as, you know, a way to make a better living. You know, union jobs tend to have higher wages, better benefits, defined benefit plans that would allow you to retire with security and, you know, have abilities to make sure that you're connected to your community. So that way, you know, you're not just alone in the struggle. And I think it's very clear when you look at the two candidates and the two parties, there is, you know, the side that supports the PRO Act, Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act, that wants to make it easier for workers to organize, that is consistently meeting with workers. And then there's the side, you know, that has Project 2025 written out for anyone to read that, you know, knocks labor law and makes it easier for employers or multinational corporation or billionaires to, you know, fire striking workers or to misclassify them or, you know, eliminate merit staffing protection. So I think, you know, the Republicans at this point, like Trump and J.D. Vance, like to talk this big game of being the friends to worker. But when you look down at the facts, they're not. They're just not.
Well, and then to your point about unions, this is another one that's really important. The CWA filed a charge against T-Mobile a couple of years ago, alleging that the mobile carrier had created a fake company-controlled union in order to drain support for a real union. That practice is illegal, but in the materials you all put out on Project 2025, you say it would allow for a fake union. So can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, I mean, company unions, right, are a thing that are thankfully banned in our country. But when you read Project 2025, it has this bill that was introduced by Marco Rubio and Senator Vance is a co-sponsor, I believe, called the TEAM Act, which would allow employers to control their own councils to weaken bargaining power. And, you know, again, right, it puts the power in the hands of the employer. You workers are allowed to meet to talk about, you know, XYZ, you know, rather than the workers themselves taking it upon themselves to discuss these issues. The company can, you know, disband them at any time. It doesn't say they must keep them. The company can have undue influences on what, you know, these councils or company unions, you know, discuss and talk about. And I mean, just think about being a worker who may be on this council. You might be fear retaliation for speaking up of actual real problems going on within the company, but you're not allowed to voice them because, you know, the company is the one in charge of this council or the union, and you're fearful of losing your job, right? This is your livelihood. You don't want that to happen. And so, you know, this is their attempt to say, yeah, we're for, you know, workers banding together, but under the watchful eye of the employer. You know, it just lessens labor unions, you know, worker-led unions' powers, and dilutes kind of our collective bargaining rights, because now, you know, not only does the union have to fight to make sure that we can organize the full unit, we have to fight this potential company union that might exist, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Jody, the AFL-CIO says Project 2025 would let corporations union bust in secret. In 2016, the Obama administration issued the Persuader Rule, which required employers to disclose when they hired union-busting consultants. In 2018, Donald Trump reversed that rule before it was implemented, but the Biden-Harris administration has taken steps to once again require more transparency. The Trump Project 2025 agenda says the Department of Labor should rescind the Persuader Rule once again should the Biden administration reverse it. So tell us more about this. And also, just how pervasive is it for companies to these days hire union-busting consultants?
It is extremely pervasive. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, union-busting. And for the longest time, the law has required disclosure of the hiring of these union busters and how much an employer is paying the union buster. But the law, the big loophole in the law that the Obama administration was trying to close, and now the Biden administration is trying to close, and that Trump wants to keep open, is that if you are not actually engaging the worker as a union buster, it need not be disclosed. And so what the industry does is it sits in the back room and coaches the managers on how to union bust so that the consultant never really has a direct, is engaged in the direct persuasion. But these managers are trained to then hold a bunch of captive audience meetings and engage in an anti-union campaign that instills a whole lot of fear in the workforce to try and stop the workers from unionizing. It's all part and parcel of the Project 2025's agenda to weaken unions. One of the other big provisions in there that is really crazy is that they want to make the FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act, which sets minimum wage overtime type rules, wages and hours, those minimal rules will be negotiable at the bargaining table rather than a floor. And so what that means is that, let's say any union member out there is waiting for their next contract to come up, what you're usually doing for the next round of bargaining after your current contract expires is to build on the work that you did before and get a raise, improve working conditions, and keep pushing for things to get better. What this proposal would allow the company to set forth as its opening proposal at bargaining, we're going to not pay overtime, and we're actually going to offer everybody 10 cents an hour. Because you can opt out of the FLSA, you can opt out of the minimum wage under Project 2025, and that means the union now, you're going to have to fight like crazy to get the raise you wanted, but actually you got to fight like crazy just to get back up to your basic rights, which then depresses the ultimate outcome in terms of wages for that contract, and ultimately then it depresses wages everywhere because unions and their collective bargaining ends up setting the standard for an industry. So non-union workers will feel the effect of this rollback as well. And then once they're weakened, as Elena was saying, they would replace them with a company union. That is a union controlled by the company, just as Elena described.
And that would be legal?
All of that would be legal under Project 2025.
Wow. Can you talk more about this? Elena, what would you add here? Because you all say that Project 2025 would repeal all prevailing wage laws. So what would you add on that?
I mean, when you read the actual text of Project 2025, Right. One of them is repealing the prevailing wage laws, which I know a lot of our folks in the trades industries like rely on to make sure that they are getting paid fair and adequate wages for the work that they're doing. And, you know, again, I think this just shows kind of the two sides of the coin of where you have folks like the Democrats, like, you know, Biden, Harris, fighting to make sure that when, you know, we are doing major infrastructure projects, for example, right, that workers actually building these, you know, roads, bridges, you know, major projects are getting paid fairly. Whereas in Project 2025, they want to repeal these. And at a time when folks in the economy are, you know, not feeling great about, you know, the wages that they're making, the cost of things, you know, why are we looking to cut these sorts of wages? It doesn't make sense. And so I think that again goes to show you what side, you know, a Trump administration would land.
It would also let states gut national overtime and minimum wage laws. According to the AFL-CIO, Project 2025 would allow states to obtain waivers from federal labor laws that protect workers' paychecks and the right to join a union, putting wages and benefits in a race to the bottom. So can you talk more about that, Jody?
It means
Oh, that's,
that.
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it means that the depending on where you live, you may not have any minimum wage or overtime rights, and that creates a race to the bottom because you'd have states cutting their minimum wages and their and eliminating overtime to try and attract business from another state. That it would just drive down wages across the country. And the other thing that this thing it doesn't just attack the Project 2025 doesn't just attack wages. It attacks benefits in an interesting way. It will tax healthcare benefits that are worth more than $12,000 over the course of a year. Now, the average employer spends about $15,000 per employee for healthcare benefits. So you can see what would happen. About $3,000 worth of healthcare, all of us would lose if we. If we have a an employer-provided healthcare plan.
What about child labor laws? Child labor laws have already changed in many Republican-controlled states. So, Jody, can you tell us what would Project 2025 do to child labor laws? And why are Republicans rolling these back?
Well, like you said, there are a bunch of state efforts led by Republicans to roll back state child labor laws. And they are doing that, I guess, the way their business friends would put it is that there's a labor shortage, so we need more workers. But largely, it's because there's low unemployment, sure, and that is driving up wages. Workers are either bargaining for better wages or they're voting with their feet and going somewhere else if the wages aren't increased because there are other job opportunities out there. By hiring children, you can lower wages because you don't have to pay kids as much as you pay an adult. And so it is all about lowering labor costs and increasing profits or maintaining profit levels. That's why that is happening. And the problem they're running into is that the Fair Labor Standards Act sets a floor below which you cannot go. What they've been rolling back so far have been add-ons that states have added to protect kids. Like, you know, when you need, if you're 15 years old in a particular state, you might need to go get a work permit with your parents signing off. Things like that they're trying to get rid of, and in some cases succeeding. But they want to go even further. And so Project 2025 opens the door to them going further by saying states can exempt themselves or waive themselves out of the Fair Labor Standards Act altogether. And more precisely, it will change the rules around hazardous occupations. That is, the Department of Labor has laid out a slew of jobs and types of jobs that if you're under a certain age, you are not supposed to be doing because they are just inherently dangerous. And what a new Trump administration plans to do is open the doors of those jobs to children.
Well, just to let listeners know what's been happening lately, in May, Newsweek had a piece called Missouri Republican Moves to Loosen Child Labor Laws and Calls Children Lazy. A Missouri Republican advocated loosening child labor laws, saying kids were lazy and should get jobs like she did at the age of 9. And then MSNBC's got a piece by Steve Bannon in April. It's been difficult to keep up with the number of Republican efforts in recent years to roll back child labor laws. The Guardian reported in the fall that GOP policymakers at the state level have led efforts to roll back child labor protections with bills introduced in at least 16 states. In some states, Republicans want to scrap age verification requirements for employers. In other states, they want minors to be able to serve alcohol. Okay, that's just bizarre. A Washington Post report last year noted some state GOP officials also eyed proposals to allow kids as young as 14 to work certain jobs in meatpacking plants and shield businesses from civil liability if a child laborer is sickened. Elena, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, it's disgusting, right? These are children that should be in school, that should be learning, that should, you know, be given the opportunity to, you know, go out and enjoy being a child. And, you know, I think one of the things that comes to mind that I think it's important to remember is who exactly is the population affected by this, right? It is low-income workers and their families. It is migrant families. What we see in a lot of the meatpacking plants, unfortunately, is that it's the children of immigrants who, you know, are trying to help provide for their family, and companies are exploiting that, right? They're exploiting that, you know, fear that these families have of deportation, the fear that they have of, you know, going into poverty and hiring, you know, children. We know that education is one of the ways that we can lift folks out of poverty and make for a successful economy. And the fact that we are having these children, you know, rather than be in school or, you know, working long hours after school and neglecting their homework, I think is truly just disgusting and awful and has terrible implications for, you know, how we see the workforce and, you know, kind of how we move forward. Mm.
The thought of even thinking about a child working in a slaughterhouse is just absolutely horrific, because adults who work in slaughterhouses have talked about just how horrible and dangerous the experience is. Final thoughts from both of you, about a minute left each. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on in Project 2025 that you'd like to tell us about? And then again, just going back to what is really at stake in this election for workers. Elena?
Yeah, I think, right, Project 2025 is this plan that they want to enact day one, not day 50, not day 100, day one. And they have it written down. Folks can read it for themselves. You know, I think a lot of the times when we talk about these things, it seems hypothetical and hyperbole, but they wrote it down for us to read, and it will have not only terrible implications for, you know, the labor movement and our ability to organize and workers to have, you know, better wages, working conditions, better health and safety conditions, but all the rights and freedoms that we truly care about, because workers aren't silos, right? We care about other things. It has terrible implications for healthcare and education and LGBTQ plus rights. And so this Project 2025 is real. It's real, and it will cause serious harm. And the Trump administration and all his friends, they want to implement it on day one.
Jody, what would you add? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, I would simply add that, like I started with at the very beginning of this, that it is a vision of a less free, less fair, less secure, and more divided society, all to the benefit of a privileged few. And we can stop it by educating one another. I think this show is an important part of that, making sure everybody understands what's in this 900-page document. It is boring to read until you start to understand what it is, you know, what it is proposing, and then it becomes a nightmare that keeps you up at night.
Jody Calamine is director of advocacy for the AFL-CIO. They represent more than 12 million active and retired workers. Elena Lopez is deputy legislative director for the Communications Workers of America. They represent 700,000 members in the private and public sectors. Jody and Elena, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And you can find all of the articles we discussed today at kalw.org. Click on News and then Your Call. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next Monday to learn more about what exactly is in the far right's 900-page authoritarian playbook, Project 2025. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.